Hello, this is Satyan Raja, and you're listening to News for the Soul. Be open in your mind, your body, your being. Allow yourself to drench in this awesome information to evolve you to your next place.
Hey, this is Dave Morehouse, and you're listening to News for the Soul.
Next on the News for the Soul Radio Network, it's time for Sacred Sound Surprises with Mylene Elke, a powerful and unique world-renowned artist and healer. Mylene guides visionaries and thought leaders from around the world to bloom into their beauty. Her astounding ability to connect with the source wisdom is what helps others flourish into their true selves. Call in now to work with Mylene today on the air, 646-595-4274. Welcome Mylene back to News for the Soul.
Hello, everyone. A wonderful, wonderful, sunny greeting from Germany. This is Mylene Elke, your host of the Sacred Sound Surprise Show. And most of you know the surprise is that I never know what is coming, what I'm going to speak about, what questions are written in, and what the songs are, and who's going to sing. I mean, I'm just sitting here and getting ready for the show. I have the sun shining right on my face from the western window. A topic that really is dear to my heart is for us to move into our grandness, right? And it is really now the time. And I had a lovely friend that called me today while I was in a home construction supply store. And they have a flower area. I was looking for some flowers to brighten the entryway. Right? I share a beautiful entryway where in the evening the sun shines on. With my neighbor that lives above me. And while I'm walking around, thinking what plant or flower blooms a little bit more in the shady area, you know, where there's not so much direct sunlight. It's beautiful, pink, yellow, like little orange and little magenta. I'm noticing since I'm a little girl, these colors keep attracting me. And I was thinking, why do we get always attracted to certain color schemes? Right? I think here and there I bought maybe a different color plant, flower, shrub. Shrub mostly because there are not so many shrubs. But annuals, right? Or roses, tulips. This color always attracts. What is it in it? I think it is there has some sunshine, the tenderness, the softness, the gentleness of what the rose color. But also then the vibrancy and brightness of the darker pink, the magenta pink, almost sometimes going to a red. And then the whole change that takes place from a very light color to a very dark color as the bloom, the blossom opens, right? To expose maybe its center for insects, or just to be observed by us, and to see how beautiful all of that is. So what is your color that you always pick? I mean, not always, because sometimes there's something else that's attracting and we stir things up. Is it more red tones? Or yellow, or I had once when I was still a landscape architect, She wanted a white garden. All flowers, all blooms, white. It was fun. It was fun researching to find the right plant for all these different minor areas or minor ecosystems in the her garden, this huge garden. And even there, I thought there was like being afraid of something when there was another color. So this is really interesting. When are you afraid of certain colors? Do they nudge you to certain thoughts? Do they make you freeze? And why is that? And why do some colors open your heart, rejoice you, you feel this happiness? Comes to mind my mother. I remember I one day I liked one plot. Was Mother's Day, and my mother at that time, she was a horseback rider. So in the morning, before we would have breakfast, she would already go take care of the stable and ride out, you know. She would go through the countryside riding. And I remember I went to the flower store and got white, I think it was canna lilies and some other white. Because that day I just thought that was so beautiful, and I found the plant so beautifully formed. And at that time we didn't have so many different cut flowers that we have now, right? That was about 40 years ago. And I remember when she came, and I saw her face. She looked into the face and got mad and didn't come in for breakfast and told us to eat breakfast. And then I, you know, I asked why was she so mad. She said, "Ah, you didn't get a colorful bouquet for me." Yeah, so for her, it had to do with death. Now looking back in my life or her life, she's always afraid of death, of dying, of not having lived. So white was for her the burial color. So what are white flowers for you? Would you make yourself a white bouquet? White flowers? Sometimes white roses are just gorgeous to put somewhere. By the way, there's a little tip. If roses, it's good to have roses in your home. When you want to switch energies, when you want support, when you're not feeling so well, if there are people visiting in your home or living with you that you don't like their energy so much, put roses there. They're fantastic transformers. And if the energy is good in a home or a room, even in an office space, they hold a longer time. If they work for us and support us, and they, you know, they drop their heads there, or weld, I think it's weld, then they have done their work. So you can exchange them, ask for a new one to come in. So it's a beautiful plant that supports us, not just by making our heart sing when we see it, but also when something needs to be transformed. And talking is transformation. There is something sad that did happen 2 days evenings ago. In my husband's wife's family, one of the children, young, decided to leave this world. So that energy of this beautiful woman, his mother, and the twin brother, beautiful young man. I'm sending all these roses now this love of roses, this transformation energy. To move them out of, not out of a shock, because it's important to live through it, right? To get the, to see the beauty, what it is, what is, what we're learning, what we're seeing, what we're experiencing, what wants to be said, because if a young gentleman like this leaves, there are many, many messages that have not been noticed. Or maybe now he's, I believe, it's going to make him even more noticeable from the other side of the veil, right? So the color, the plant of love, right? If you show appreciation, you show love for someone, you show support. It is adoring. It adores it, right? There's something adoring about it. If you adore someone, the way they are, the way they live, the way they smile at you, to see these things and to remember these things. It's also to everyone who's involved in this, who's going to think a lot different about life and how precious life is and how precious every interaction with every single person in every moment is important. So everyone, take time to speak with children. Take time to listen to a spouse. Take time to listen to the elder. And if you really don't have time that moment, say, I will be back. Then you speak, I will listen. And then do take that time. And you will notice if they can open or will not be open, be able to open and tell you then. If they're not able to do that, then it is moment really to slow down for you. To move the thing that you thought you needed to do out of your world for a moment, in a way to stop it, and to be very, very present. And as you're very present, everything around shifts. Because there's a need in that moment that you two speak. A few more of you. And this moment is so precious. And do not worry. Everything that follows afterwards will unravel into something beautiful. And even if it, in the first moment it doesn't look this way. There is nothing more precious than another person. Everyone is looking for purpose. The purpose is to live our natural state and to live down, bring down and emanate these principles of the cosmos. And all those principles, none of them say hurry in life, don't listen. Right? The compassion, their love, their beauty, their freedom, their peace, and the list goes on. Everything else otherwise is something that we created to distract us from who we are, or was distracted to distract us, or was created to distract us to find who we are, to move into who we are. Hey, 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 hey. Beautiful life is in all facets, all the transitions, all of the range, like, you know, the color range of every flower out there, even when it goes into the browns at the end, or it starts all with the green. Looking. Sometimes the words are not even needed. How plentiful the variety of everything is. And to experience this variety, to soak in this variety, and don't push through things. Everything has its own tempo. And we're taught, we've been taught, and luckily it's stopping. You know, you have to show your strengths. You cannot be who you cannot be seen crying, especially to men, to boys, to girls. And it's the same set. We're not, you know, don't laugh too loud, and, you know. But there we go with what arises in the moment and to be present with it. Fully present. It's interesting, today a package came, was torn up, and the man who brought it, and before I signed, he asked me to check if everything is okay, and I said, yeah, it looks like everything will be okay. I had not a feeling that anything was broken, and he said, yeah, but you're so positive. It's because you were so positive about it and optimistic. Nothing is broken in the end when we opened it up. This was packaged anyway in a carton again. And he said, oh no, I said, oh, I'm this way since I'm a little girl. He said, ah, it's in the DNA. He's the same way, but he doesn't believe that the world will be this way. And I replied, I believe, though, that it is this way, and that I'm not giving up being this positive girl, this positive woman, this positive being, because I believe in everyone. So we have to believe what arises. We can make it the best out of it. It's not like we have to find it good. Oh, we make the best out of it. Because it doesn't help to get mad about something we can't change. It is broken. So also in your life, take a look where you're becoming more soft. Not soft, you know, your physical body, your being, this gentleness, this unedginess in a way. Especially when it's not needed. This optimist, the seeing things positive. Is it hard for you to see things positive? Is there a certain trust behind everything? And then there are things maybe turn around, you just know they will. You have that feeling. And it's maybe not so much a feeling. We can even go away from that feeling and say, do you just know? Do you just know it's going to change? Is you just going to know you will experience certain things? You may not be sure of the time or the timeline, but there's a surety, right? This is in a way also a positive, being joyful. I had to think about it. Why is that I always see the good in people? And I've been, you know, been told, oh, I'm not, it can't be this way. But something uniquely in me then that is uniquely me. So look for what is really uniquely you. And not the normal marketing jargons that are being used. Go deeper. What is that feeds you? This is interesting. I'm going back to the woman's back. Really true now. About a website, right? But it is not about a website, it's helping her. But it turns out it's more pulling out or what is arising, the experiences of her life, what touched her the most, is suddenly what is being bred, is the branding, the color that are chosen, the plants, the landscape, the soil. Then suddenly it's in the flag of that country, and the same color is in the flower that she loves, and she has forgotten about that. She loves that flower since she's a little girl. She does have one in her house, because here it doesn't grow outside in the north hemisphere. And to really pull that out, because suddenly then you speak different. Once you remember, you get there and you can remember what is really yours. Suddenly, it's like an ignition. It goes boom. It fills every single cell in your body. Every single cell. And then you can talk about it, and suddenly you see it reflected in everything else in your life. Yeah, I'm going to take by these flower colors. I have wallpaper, I have my kitchen pink. When I was younger, I had clothes like this. Now I have more clothes like that. It's easier to find also nowadays, right? And the blues and greens and yellows, I don't have many colors. But so my colors, I wear them somehow. The ones I paint with, I wear them. I have in my house, it's a kind of pens I get. It is, what I put around my book covers. It's in furniture. So it's suddenly you can see how deeply it penetrates into our life. And often we don't speak about it or bring that out and don't let ourselves be led by it. So let yourself be led by it. Because it's part of you and it's always there. It's not something new you have to go look for. Again, like with the purpose. It's nothing we have to look for. We've come with this as a thing, baby. So for me, it's beauty, absolute beauty. I see beauty in everything. And see the complexity of beauty. And I love to create beautiful things. Even humans, to get them back into their beauty, into their grandness and vastness, so it shines out of them that every fiber, every cell dances in its own rhythm. There is no tightness in the body anymore. The voice is the voice they're speaking with. It's their voice. Not a condensed one by someone else. To see the beautiful body that is so uniquely to every single person. This is so fascinating. I'm looking at the roses, some of those roses, they're more or less coming off, popping open all at the same time in everyone's garden. And here are gardens that are 100 years old, 200 years old, 300 years old, and then they're brand new gardens, and all of these pop more or less around the same time into beautiful flowers. So what do they know, the young ones and the older plants? They know what they're connected to. They know what's in their essence. They understand their natural state. This is for you to understand and to see your natural state is here to be with nature and to be with humans, to be with animals. And everything else is not so important. And to move, this is really, really important, and to move through these beautiful landscapes, and to move with people or to move alone through the landscape, to nourish yourself with that as well. And to not be fixed. And we're fixing ourselves to a space, to a person. We're fixing ourselves to many, many things. To a job, to a bed, to things. So maybe it's time now to unfix other, in a way, right? To become more flexible, to become more movable, to create mobility, to lessen things we have around us. How much do we need? Right, as I'm taking care of my husband because he hurt himself and he's not so mobile. Well, the last 4 months, you know, I thought a lot about mobility. But the most beautiful thing I'm observing, we're always all in the same room. Most of the time, everything is done in this togetherness, in this living room. Everyone has their space. But so you noticed, I thought, you don't need a lot. And really, does everyone want to be alone in one room? Unless you need time for yourself. And even there, are we so trained to be alone that it is so hard for us to be in community? And is there an urge in many of us to be in community and to eat together again, to experience, to dance, to sing? We can all do it alone. But it is more fun sometimes with other people. But mostly we cannot find other people again to do it with. Luckily, we have something like beautiful like this, like the internet, where we connect. Right, we can put conference software, we can do live streaming, and even dance with each other. I invite you to bring in more of those things that you desire to and love to do. And to invite others to do it with you. And too often we're too afraid, but you can just go and say, would you like to come inside and have a coffee or tea? If a neighbor, you meet a neighbor on the street. And sometimes you even sit there in silence, it's okay. Maybe there's not so much in common, or in common yet. Give a person a moment to become themselves in your presence. All of you have such beautiful healers listening. And you know it. And this is what is going to be important, I believe, to show that and to speak about how uniquely and gifted all of us are on this earth. that you are gifted, that I'm gifted. And it's also timely to live it and to use our gifts. And maybe look at new ways of using your gifts that you have not done until now. With new twists, with new flavor. What new dishes can you make with the same ingredients? Ponder on this. And try it. And if it's difficult to do in your work, for example, start with, you know, get 6-7 ingredients and cook 3 times in a different way with it. It does something to you. It moves you forward in your creativity. You may notice that you're hesitant of doing it because you're used to certain things and you like it this way. Then maybe do it at a different time. And it's not the thing for you to do. But you became aware that you're hesitant and ponder on it. Where does it come from? I observed someone who had difficult sharing things. Even with loved ones. I said, how come? I thought, I should say. Because things like this really interest me, right? I'm interested in how people function and why and how it can be resolved and dissolved. Right, if we want to be and live in our natural state, everything else that doesn't suit us is going to dissolve, or it's going to be dissolved, it's going, Yeah, it needs to be dissolved. Just go strictly right there. Needs to be dissolved. So start dissolving. And as you dissolve it within you, it dissolves in others and it dissolves in this world. It disappears. And that's what we're moving into now, to a becoming a being, acting on your knowledge, acting on your wisdom. Not waiting for others, making the decisions yourself. This is really hard, especially if it's a grander scheme. Maybe for yourself it's okay, maybe for a client it's okay, maybe for family it's still okay, but what happens if it impacts maybe more of your family, your larger family, or if it impacts the whole company you work at, or the whole town, or the whole country, or the future of this earth. At which one of those positions did you pull inward? And I love it, someone who didn't. And that's yes, there's a sorceress. But also the ones who pulled in, take a look at it. Why is it that you pulled in? You know, it's like a snail that goes back into a house. Become aware of it, that you did. It's not a bad thing. And when you're comfortable again, do nudge yourself a little bit to come back out, to explore a little bit more, to go forward a little bit more. To try new things. To try in a different way. Like I was speaking about this person. He was not used that other people would share things with him. Very few things given, and so maybe it was very precious for him. Or something special, or maybe there was one person who gave him something very, very beautiful, and he gave it to someone or lent it and then never came back, or it broke. Maybe even it created a trauma. So we don't know until we start looking. So if one person did break it, that means we will not ever give anything away for someone to use for a while. Maybe get returned even better, or some new things will be added at the return. The happiness for the other person who has that one thing for a certain time or for when he really needed it. Take a look at that.
No.
is a newness to this remembering, and you know, this softness and this remembering, this recognizing. Where a few years ago you did rituals, meditation, and all of this barely needs to be done. This gets compromised, right? The ritual compromise, the meditations, in a way to save time, that we don't even have to plan in these things. They just arise, they're there. Think about it and boom, you've created the answers. You connect to the source. You observe your way in. There's a new way of how you observe yourself. And there's also this vastness of how aware you are. And really, the whole earth, people are becoming differently aware. More sensible to awareness and sensible to feeling the awareness or asking for awareness from others. And this is the way to go, right? By this connection to each other, to our beautiful planet, to whatever is beyond, to our ancientness, to what is already surrounding us, to our ancestors, and asking, where is this all leading? Where is this all coming from? And closing these question lines. By sensing it, by retrieving these answers that suddenly appear, maybe write them down, or paint them, or dance them out. There is a state of being that is calmer, quiet, less of a talking is needed or speaking is needed. There is more communication happening. So when I speak about communication, I mean that is then the telepathic communication. Or even if you're talking, you're aware of all of the communications that are taking place, right? Or reading each other, reading the face, reading the body, reading the energies, reading the light that's expressed, reading the beings that are around us, that are supporting us, right? And they even communicate with it, reading where it leads us to, reading where it comes from. And communicating the importance of life and the importance of acting and being every moment and being present, as acting on one's knowledge, on one's wisdom, in every moment. Every moment is precious. And most importantly, it's really not the moment that is precious. It's you who is precious. It's me who is precious. So everything I spoke about, be that for yourself. Yeah, be that self, be the aware you. I'll be the aware me. Cherishing my life, cherishing how I act, cherishing the connection to all, cherishing the connection to my son, to my cat, right? Husband, to my plant, to my new plants outside at the door. And to listen with new ears, listen with your skin, listen with your hair. Become very, very in tune with what sounds are around you, what sounds people make, animals make, the wind makes, when the wind carries and the plants, you know, when the wind comes by. The water, the ocean and the stars. Go into that. Become aware of everything that is surrounding you and how much you are part of all of it. And very, very important part. And not less or more. And all of you know I'm here to support you and to pull out or to guide or just to be with you so you can remember more of you and to integrate it into your life, into your work, into your body, to emanate it and out into the world. In a way to ignite exactly that uniqueness within you, to create your unending momentum. Because what you bring out into the world moves on forward forever. And you bring it out with precision, with love, so much light, with warmth, with this softness. That is so beautiful. That is you. So thank you, everyone. This is for being so present in the softness that is today, this quietness, the circumstances also of my larger family. And your circumstances of seeing what beautiful being you are and showing more of you to everyone and emerging it to everything. So thank you very much for listening to the Sacred Sound Surprise Show. This is Mylene, your host, and I will see you next time in the middle of the month. Right? It's the third Tuesday. And until then, the best to you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, man. We all love to hear the good news. So we all should rush to hear the good news. But we can just find the good news.
NSTN. NSTN. News for the soul at the very best. NSTN. NSTN. News for the soul at the very best. NSTN. NSTN, news for the soul at the very best.
Yeah, man, just log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Can you hear me?
We are a life-changing talk radio. We give you good news to keep you on the go. And you can also share the good news, you know. And that's the way we keep in the flow. We only focus on the positive things, yeah. We
we only focus on the positive things, yeah. We not go put none of the negative in there. We not go put none of the negative in there. NFT, yeah. NFT, yeah. News for the soul at the very best. NFT, yeah. NFT, yeah. News for the soul at the very best. Log on to www.newsforthesoul.com. Every time. Come hear the good news. Share the good news. And we all feeling good.
The News for the Soul Radio Network airs daily and our archives are always totally free. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Continuing on with our conscious corona coverage theme this week, someone who I haven't talked to in about a bajillion years, I heard him doing a presentation on what was happening with the quarantining and the freaking out and around the planet, and he was the voice of sanity spewing out over the airwaves, and I wanted him to come and share his perspective on what's happening right now on the planet with you. This is Peter Sage, renowned international serial entrepreneur, author, philosopher, teacher, speaker, and he's here on the line now. Peter, nice to speak with you again. Welcome.
Nicole, it's been quite a while. What an absolute pleasure to be back. How are you, my dear?
I'm well. Still kicking. Still cruising along.
Of course you are.
So, what the hell is going on this planet right now?
Wow, what an exciting time. Unprecedented, and I'm always mindful of starting with the right frame. And one of the things that I'm a great believer in is that if you get caught up in a wave of fear or panic, then you will have had your opportunities for growth, for lessons, for self-preservation, for whatever it may be, opportunities to contribute, compromised. Mm. And what we're seeing right now is a global egregore, textbook play-by-plan. I don't know if you're familiar with the term egregore, if your listeners are, but it's essentially an energetic wave of how fear, conflict, panic escalates. And I think Victor Hugo was the first person to coin the term, to be fair. But it's following all of the textbook principles behind it. But as I say, with every great adversity always comes opportunity. And I'm very happy to share my thoughts. If you have any questions specifically, I can certainly, as I say, dive in and show you where I'm at.
Absolutely. Well, let's just dive in at the beginning. So as you say, that was, well, it does feel like a social experiment on some level. I mean, to shut down borders and everyone being, when you look at the numbers and the numbers don't seem to add up with the scale of the reaction, maybe let's start there.
Sure. Well, one of the biggest challenges here is, again, and as we heard on the previous show, when fear rises, intelligence plummets, and you've got various lenses with which to look through this right now. And if you look through an objective lens as to what's happening in terms of the global reaction, you have to look at all of the different angles. You've got governments that are reacting to public opinion. They're reacting to medical statements that are looking through their eyes. They're looking at it from a place of self-preservation, don't want to become a Johnny-come-lately, how can I not get lambasted after this settles down with making the right or wrong decisions. There's all of those factors going on. But let's just take a breath, for example, because one of the challenges here, and this is where calm heads will prevail And when the dust settles on this thing, we will find out exactly how far off base we were or not. But I want to begin with just pointing out two things. First is that the media, which is largely responsible for driving this, for example, if nobody had actually turned their televisions on or had heard of COVID-19, we'd be having a very different reaction. But the media's job is to essentially create two words, eyes on. It's not a charity. Instead, it's a business model that thrives on viewership. It's highly competitive, and they are enjoying right now probably the highest ratings and viewings in their history without having to hire the people from Madison Avenue or Harvard that they normally do to create headlines that invoke fear. They've got something that's been laid on a plate for them. And I say that specifically just so you can understand the context and the backdrop of what I'm about to share next. And that is this, that the two statistics that are driving everything right now. Yeah, there's only two statistics that is perpetuating this madness, this fear and panic and this global shutdown. And that is new cases and death rates. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's what everybody's fixated on. Oh my God, 1,000 new cases here. X amount of people have died there. That's what people are going. And you have to stop and take a breath for a second, because both of those figures are absolutely, fundamentally, widely inaccurate and misleading. Case closed. And again, I'm not belittling the people that are lying on ventilators here. I have full empathy and concern for that. What I'm saying here is that those two statistics are being accepted and unquestioned when, if you do a little bit of stress testing, they fall through the floor. For example, let's start with new cases. Now, if you look at how that figure is generated, they are testing people who, for whatever, initially the people that already had, let's call it symptoms, and then wider areas of the population. And guess what? The more people they test, the more people are testing positive. Well, there's three things I want to share there. Then again, please, everybody, do your own research. This is a case of being able to have a balanced view. But don't get hoodwinked by misdirection, which is what's happening. So let's start with the three things. The first is they can't test for the virus. I'm amazed more people aren't aware of that. They cannot actually test for the virus. There's not a test on the planet that can actually test for the virus. The test that they use is called a polymerase chain reaction test. And what it does, it is a theory. The theory states that if you take a small swab or blood sample or nasal swab, and you can sequence the gene in that millions and millions of times to try to look for some level of protein or viral sequence that may resemble or be linked to in some way what we now call COVID-19. The creator of that test, who won the Nobel Prize for it, was very clear in what he said in terms of his thoughts on the efficiency. And I'll quote, "It is a fundamentally flawed theory. It's useful in other areas, but in terms of identifying individual viruses in people, fundamentally flawed." And we've only just managed to see some of the actual statistics that are coming out in terms of the false positive rate. Now, we're all familiar with false negatives, but the false positive rate hasn't actually been studied or released until recently, and you can go have a look. It's on PubMed, peer-reviewed medical site. And I'll save you the trouble. It's upwards to up to 80%, which means that let's go test 1,000 people, and let's say 100 people test positive. Well, according to PubMed, 80% of those are false positive. So that's one issue. Second issue is this, that we're actually asking this test to look for something we've never looked for before. So, for example, if you're a bird watcher and you walk through a wood and you're always looking for birds, and then one day you're about to walk in the wood and somebody says, "Excuse me, can you help me look for mushrooms?" And you walk in, all of a sudden you see mushrooms everywhere. You've never looked for them before. They were always there. You see, whatever they're using as the antibody sequence for the PCR test has probably sat in half the population. It's probably been exposed to a huge amount of people, many of which probably had it, didn't even know, or maybe even had a sniff or a cough or shrugged it off or whatever, typical kind of flu season. And of course, now guess what? According to this test, you've got the virus.
Mm.
Now, that's one aspect. Just in terms of the numbers that they're pointing their torch into a dark room looking for something they've not looked for before, and is there any reason it's showing up a lot? So that's just one aspect. The initial death rates, there's two major problems with that. The first is that the initial death rates of the high percentages, like 5% or whatever it was up to, were taken based upon doing the numbers of the small group of people that had the symptoms to begin with and then tested positive and then died. So it is focused on the microcosm of people that were limitedly tested at that time who were already sick. That's one issue. It didn't take into account the hundreds of thousands of people that may have had or not had the virus that had absolutely zero symptoms. The challenge, though, is that almost every single person that, for example, that has died of this virus was dying of something before the virus. They had a comorbid condition. In fact, in Italy, which a lot of people are looking at the statistics on right now, the government released them a week or so ago that all of the people that had died up to that point, 99% were seriously ill. They had a underlying condition, and up to half of them, it was about 48%, I believe, had three conditions stacked on top of each other. And then the virus comes along, and this is how the flu kills millions and millions of people every single year. It's the fact your immune system is already compromised, and it becomes a little bit of the straw that breaks the camel's back. The challenge, though, is that the media are then saying, this person died of the virus. No, they didn't. And they tried that with HIV and AIDS, and it was the same pattern following. So if you had pneumonia and you died of pneumonia, you were recorded as a statistic of someone who died of pneumonia. If you had pneumonia and you tested for HIV positive and died, AIDS killed you. That's how they did the statistics. And there was actually six diseases that qualified to start with. And then what happened is the worldwide pandemic of AIDS, you know, if you remember in the late 80s, never happened. So in order to continue the funding, because public opinion was like, oh, well, it seems like it wasn't that much to worry about, there was a huge influx of new AIDS cases. What happened? See, we need more money. Well, no, all they simply did was overnight, they changed the criteria. Instead of those six diseases and positive for HIV, they widened it to 12. And then it was 18, and then it was 20. And so the cases kept jumping up every so often to try to keep it on the radar for the media and the public awareness. But nothing was really happening other than them manipulating the statistics of what qualified for somebody dying of AIDS. And yeah, when you say the virus is killing all these people, no, the virus may be contributing to some underlying comorbid conditions that these people would – who's asking the question, how many of these would have died anyway? Because if we strip that number out – and this is the big point. I'm not saying I'm right or wrong here. I'm saying that people aren't asking the questions, and there's some pretty large elephants in the room. And until we address those, the panic is overinflated. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean – to the degree that the whole world situation is in, with all businesses closing and all borders closed, and what's really going on here?
100%. And here's the challenge. And this is, I can almost see several of the books that are going to be written about this after the fact. And a title I can almost guarantee will be used: the Corona Nocebo. Because essentially what is being programmed right now into the minds and hearts of people who are unfortunately still addicted, the vast majority of the population, to mainstream media, is that they are being fed a distorted picture of what is happening based on the facts I've just outlined. And as a result, they are programming themselves into a compromised immune system. Now, everybody knows that the fastest way to shut down the immune system is through fear. Yeah, there's two reasons for that. Yeah, primarily because in a normal state of health, you have a huge army inside you protecting you at all times from the trillions of bacteria and viruses that exist quite happily, codependently, inside your body. Yeah, you have about 70 to 100 trillion human cells in your body, and you have about four times that amount of bacteria and viruses. And we all get along very happily because we have an immune system that stops them from getting out of line. But the scientific name for those organisms is opportunistic organisms. And the reason for that is because they're waiting for an opportunity that for the soldiers that are currently guarding them, your immune system, to not be on duty. And what happens is that that army takes an enormous amount of energy to maintain. Next to brain function and your digestive system, the immune system sucks a huge energy task, a huge amount of energy for the body. That's okay. It's doing an important job. But as soon as we get scared, guess what? Evolutionarily, that usually means there is an external threat. Lion, tiger, marauding bandit from the next village, whatever it may be. In modern times, assailants or, something running towards me. You get the idea. So in order to mobilize as much energy as required to deal with the external threat, it pulls it immediately from the immune system because the immune system is fine to be on hold for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes while you deal with running away, hiding, fighting the attacker or whatever. You need that energy. But it crashes the immune system, and that's fine. The viruses and bacteria aren't going to do a lot within 30 minutes, and then the immune system's back in charge. But when you're chronically fearful, when you are going for periods of days where you can't sleep at night or you're stressed out of your brain, your immune system is completely compromised, which is why if you go to hospital and you have an organ transplant, they will always give you stress hormones to drop your immune system quickly so that the body's own immune system doesn't reject the new organ. Standard medical procedure, because they understand that. So if you have a look, we're now being programmed that there's this mad killer virus that's rampaging across the world, infecting and killing people, right? If you believe the media's version of it. And as a result of that, people are becoming immune compromised, which means that one of the 500 different coronaviruses that are out there, any one of those opportunistic organisms might likely show up and have a little go. And now all of a sudden we get a symptom. And of course, if you're worried about a disease and you get a symptom, it's always the disease we're worried about that we think it is, human nature. So now we start panicking. Now it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if you see the power of the placebo, we understand the power of the placebo. Because in law, if I'm a drug company and I invest $100 million into getting a drug developed and produced, my toughest challenge is beating your belief about a sugar pill when it comes to testing against my drug. And a lot of them don't beat that. In fact, one of the most best-selling antidepressants on the market outperformed the placebo-controlled trials by 2%. Let's put that into perspective, Nicole. Hey, if you're depressed and I'm wearing a white coat and I give you a M&M, and I'm telling you that this is a powerful antidepressant, you're going to be okay. I've got a 98% chance of actually having the same effect as, without mentioning names, you get what I mean, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the placebo is powerful. And the opposite of that is the nocebo. There are many documented cases. Now, I'll pick one. Gentleman walks in for a test, not been, standard chest x-ray, was told he'd actually got stage 4 cancer. And he's like, I've not been feeling great. And anyway, he's told he's got 6 months to live. Go home, put your affairs in order. I mean, that's a pretty bad day at the office. 6 months later, he dies. Family request an autopsy, just standard request. And it turns out he has absolutely no cancer. They were baffled. What happened? They went back. He was given the wrong patient chart when he sat in the office with the doctor. This is why doctors shouldn't, in most countries, they're not now, in some they still do. They give death sentences to people. They did it to my mother. My mother had lung cancer. They walked into the oncologist, and she says, I'm sorry, it's inoperable. You've got 6 months to live. Do you want to take a guess how long it was before she died? Bang on 6 months. And while I could have throttled the oncologist, I mean, they were doing their job. They didn't understand. They live in a different world. But I didn't have the authority. My parents' generation put doctors in white coats on a pedestal, and me as the son didn't have the emotional authority to be able to change her mind or convince her otherwise. So we know how powerful that is. So right now we are programming the entire world that as soon as they cough, Nicole, I'll finish with this last example, and then we can open it up for discussion a little bit. If you walk into the office and somebody says, Nicole, you okay? You don't look very well. And you're like, yeah, I feel fine. Yeah, I've got a great night. Everything's good. 20 minutes later, somebody says, Nicole, you okay? You look pale. You're like, no, I feel okay. Another half an hour, someone walks up and says, Nicole, you should probably go home. You look like crap. Your instant response is, you know something? Yeah, I think I'm coming down with something. It's like you can program people into that because the body is so powerful, it will always produce physiologically. Now, remember, every thought produces a chemical, a neuropeptide, a hormone, a transmitter that will have a powerful physiological effect on your body, and then you get into the cycle. Placebo, nocebo. And right now we are in the midst of a massive global nocebo. That's my view.
So what's really going on? Why is this happening, do you think?
Well, I mean, if you don't look at the – I'm not a big conspiracy theory guy. Yeah, and the reason for that is because you'll never really know. So why waste energy?
Yeah.
Don't get sucked into those kind of rabbit holes, because then all you'll start subjecting yourself to is confirmation bias and getting into positionalities where you're more committed to being right than being happy. But if you look at the classic egregore pattern, again, media picks up on something that gives them eyes on. They start using these two statistics that are completely false, inaccurate, and misleading, because they don't actually tell the real story. And when calm heads prevail, the autopsy that'll be done on this thing will probably trigger a huge amount of lawsuits, of lost businesses and suicides and goodness knows what, all because when people look at what the real numbers were, that they think, hang on a minute. Yeah? But in the meantime, we get scared. So we push the energy pendulum from one side, and the only thing that can happen is it comes back and hits us harder. Now, again, you can look at the whole vaccine issue. I mean, it's insane that the UK public were petitioning the government to put them on lockdown because they were so scared of this invisible virus that was clearly killing everybody. And at some point, you can almost see the playbook. You've got a pharmaceutical company or something where it's just holding back and saying, not enough pain yet, not enough pain, no, not yet. And then in about another probably couple of weeks, when businesses are falling through the floor, people are depressed, and people are screaming at the government, they're screaming at the media for a solution and get us out of this mess, something will ride to the front on a white horse, and people will be sprinting to their GPs and medical practitioners with their sleeves rolled up, ready to take some untested, fast-tracked, mercury-laden, whatever. And, again, don't get me started on that, but it's almost tragic the way that people who are sleeping awake can be programmed when their neocortex isn't operating. Tragic.
Well, it shocked me how seamless and quick this all took over everything. In that talk I was listening to, you had some great solutions and ideas and suggestions for, riding this through in the best way possible. Why don't we go there?
Yes, certainly. And I'd like to give an analogy, a frame here, if you will. I believe that we all star in our own movie called Our Life. And I know that everybody's the star of the movie of their life because they're the only one that's in every single scene of their movie. Now, if you adopt that frame for a second, your job being here is essentially, as a professional actor in the movie of your life, to be the best version of yourself that you can be, for whatever that means for you in your movie. And the challenge right now is that there are billions of people that have been recruited as unpaid film extras into a large budget movie called the Corona movie. And I want to remind people that there's going to be a lot of winners and a lot of losers out of this, no matter what. When it all blows over, the question will be, how did I take charge of my movie when this happened? Because this is, there's a lot of great things coming out of this. We're learning how to work together. We're learning how to be less selfish. We're learning how to, what to value more than our pursuit of material goods. There's a lot of positives that you can identify in that. Now there's fish swimming in the canals again in Venice, I heard. Yeah, the air pollution is better because the airlines are down. We're starting to see some benefits around that. And nothing unites like a common enemy. So we are seeing a lot more ethnocentric focus and an ability to work together than previously done. And that's good news. If we can learn that lesson and take that with us on the back end of this, that'll be something that's good. But as the star of the movie in your life, you have to ask the questions. What's my opportunity here? Because there are a lot of people, if people are listening to this, it's usually because they have an interest in more higher conscious than mainstream media and channels. Let's put it that way. And as a result, you are most likely an influencer at some level, either in your community, in your circle of friends, or what have you. There are a lot of scared, panicked, distraught, distressed people out there right now that are looking for beacons of certainty. They're looking for role models that can step up and say, listen, nobody knows what's going to happen, but I also am not going to worry about what I can't control. What I can control is my own actions. Yes, I can wash my hands. I can keep social distancing. Yes, I can take some powerful natural substances to boost my immune system, which seems to be the only single thing that all of these so-called experts, governments, press actually agree on. They can't agree on what the numbers mean. They can't agree on what to do about it, but they can agree on the fact that the only people that seem to be dying here are people with compromised immune systems in the vast majority. So we're evolutionarily designed to deal with this. And as a result, you can control how to help your immune system. The problem for most of North America, unfortunately, is that they're the sickest population on the planet because, again, they've been programmed by mass media for either convenience or economy. So very few people cook healthy food. Very few people have the time. And again, it's not right or wrong. You understand their model of the world. You can imagine a young single mom on welfare with two kids screaming. She hasn't got time to cook something healthy if she's under stress and pressure and trying to juggle between two jobs and pay for childcare. She's reaching for the ready meals. She's watching the commercials on TV that say, feed your kids Cheerios in the morning and they'll be cheery. I mean, for God's sake. If you can improve your immune system right now, that is the fastest way that you can personally control the effects of whatever may be out there on you. And then practicing a lot of the recommendations that are being given here will help you from preventing from passing that on to somebody else. But the fastest way to strengthen your immune system is to stop what's poisoning it, which is fear. So we're practicing social distancing here, Nicole. I'd like to put a new term out for you guys. I'd like to practice fear distancing. If you get a WhatsApp message, a text message, a meme on Facebook that induces panic, that underlines some in statistic that says you should take this more seriously, or shows you some media report of somebody dying in a hospital and say, oh my God, delete the damn thing. It's not helpful. This virus needs proximity to spread. It needs about minimum 6 feet or maximum 6 feet, whatever it is. It hasn't got legs. It can't walk. It needs proximity for transmission. The text message that you send that can drop somebody's immune system can fly around the world in a millisecond, infect thousands of people, no matter how many masks they're wearing, no matter how much self-isolation they're in, compromise their immune system. And the message that you forward or post may just find its way to one person in hospital who is on the edge and who is desperately needing something now like hope or a smile or something to make them laugh. And instead, your message may be the thing that underscores their lack of hope and pushes their immune system over the edge and takes them out. So right now, we want to be practicing fear. You want to beat this thing? The heroes that are working on the front line, the doctors, the nurses, the first responders, the scientists working around the clock to try to find something that can help. All of those people, if we do our job and stop the fear virus, that'll give them the time to try to stop the real one. And so what practical things we can do? For a start, turn off the media. It's only going to compromise your immune system. Trust me, that if there is nothing good going to be coming out of watching constant negative news, also known as CNN. There is nothing positive going to be gained from you being glued to a mechanism of delivery that you are confusing for authority. And as a result of that, go get a gratitude list. Yeah, go start enjoying your time off work and connecting to nature. Stop future pacing potential negative scenarios and start being in the moment and breathing in a way that calms you down and reactivates your parasympathetic nervous system. Breathing in for 5 seconds, out for 5 seconds, for 5 minutes will do that. It'll restore coherence between the heart and the brain, and your immune system will start to power up rather than be compromised and go down. Start taking a shed load of vitamin C. Again, vitamin C has been proven time and time again to have massive impact in the medical community against viruses, against opportunistic organisms. Because the alternative to understanding that is saying, imagine, I've heard a great analogy from John Bergman, who I've got a lot of respect for. If you don't follow him on YouTube, please go follow him. He's a voice of reason as well in these times. Top-level chiropractor, does his research. I've got a lot of respect for him, John Bergman. And he shared a great analogy. He says, if you're driving down the road and you see some roadkill, you see a dead rabbit on the side of the road, and there's all these flies hovering around it. You keep driving and you see a skunk. And it's like, and there's a dead skunk at the side of the road, and there's all these flies hovering around it. You thought, oh my God, killer flies. The flies are killing everything. No, the flies are taking advantage of the fact that it was dead, that it was compromised, that it can't get up and run away. You are compromising your immune system with every time you turn on the media. And as a result, the flies that are flying around your body right now that can't harm you will start to feed. So strengthen the immune system. Turn off the media. Take vitamin C, iodine, magnesium. There are so many different things you can use to boost your immune system that most people don't usually do because they're too busy taking a box of Twinkies out of 7-Eleven. Oh, dear. Are you hearing me?
So I love that fear distancing. We've been talking about what you focus on expands for 2 decades plus now. More challenging when all this stuff is in our face, right? So for those that are having more of a challenge getting there, tuning out the frequency of fear, are there more any other deeper practices you can suggest?
Well, one has to understand that one of the most significant awarenesses on the journey of emotional maturity in a human being's life is that the day you wake up to realize that life is not a comfort-centric experience, it is a growth-centric experience. And everywhere you look in nature will validate that. We've been sold the illusion of certainty in the 20th century. I'm the first generation that's ever had food certainty. My parents had rations in the war. And one of the challenges we're seeing now, this fear-based reaction is nothing more than a swing back to the fact that most people thought they were living with certainty as a fact, when certainty is nothing more than illusion. And when we realize that we're here to grow, we can start to see that the first law of personal growth is this: theory doesn't cover the price of admission to the higher levels of greatness. You can read all about the theory, you can do the textbook exercises, you can have the dress rehearsal, but if you really want to see how you act when the chips are down, you want to see whether the best of you shows up or the worst of you shows up, then nothing beats a live firing exercise. And this that's going on right now is potentially a once in a lifetime opportunity for you to be able to deal with stuff that could come along at any time. And understanding that, okay, the real muscle I want to be building now is the ability to handle uncertainty. And if I can be a demonstration to my kids, because if you've got kids, Nicole, and kids will never do what you tell them to do, they'll always do what you do. If you smoke 20 cigarettes a day and you tell your kids not to start smoking, forget it. They're going to light up because that's what mom and dad do. So for you right now, as parents, for example, when this is over, at some point your kids are going to have a challenge because life is a growth-centric experience. I believe we're in Earth school. You get graduation events. That's what this is for many people. And when they have their challenges, and it could be their first, you know, being fired from a job, it could be their first divorce or rejection from a girl, whatever it may be, you have a chance right now to show them how to be a role model for uncertainty. You say, oh, wow, do you remember how mum showed up when, you know, I spoke to one of my students last night, and yeah, she's a mother. She's about to lose her business. All of her, yeah, still got to pay rent, but yeah, hasn't got any customers now because she's not allowed to work. And I'm like, you have the ability to use this as an example. Imagine in a year when your kids have a problem and say, oh, wow, do you remember how mum showed up when she was on the verge of losing everything? You know, when that corona thing was going on, how she was calm. She's like, listen, kids, we don't know what's going to happen, but just know that we'll get through this. Yep. And, you know, turn off the media, stay strong, do what's right, think calmly, don't follow the crowd, don't panic, we've got this. Wow, remember when she did it? Yeah, that's the kind of person I want to look up to. Yeah, how do we do that now? You see what I'm saying here, Nicole?
Mm-hmm. Can you recommend, because part of the reason people are going to the media, like you said, it's a quote-unquote trusted source of information. Can you recommend alternative resources to get real information on what's happening right now?
And again, the challenge here is the definition of real information. Everybody is going to be looking through and projecting through their own eyes because that's the law of humanity. People can only ever project from the level they're at. I'll give a parallel analogy. If you have a cancer diagnosis, you go to see a doctor. A doctor's going to recommend drugs or chemo. Now, you go to a surgeon, he's going to want to cut. Right? If you go to a virologist now as an expert and trusted source of information, they are going to give you their model of the world as to, you know, what viruses do, because that's the world they live in and how they project. If you go to a naturopath right now and ask for him, the trusted expert, he's going to give you the exact view of what happens in his world and how to deal with this, and it's no big deal as long as your immune system's. You get my point? Everybody's going to project from their own model of the world. So rather than confuse yourself, I would encourage everybody to chunk up and say, okay, if I'm going to get programmed with information, which is impossible not to if you're human, it's just how we operate, how we're wired, then at least I can choose the quality of information and what is the agenda behind it. We know the agenda of the media is not to put your health above its rating figures. Sorry, case, try and argue that one. Yeah, the job of the media, having access to all of the information through the sources they have, is to represent that information in a way that first gets you to watch their channel rather than somebody else's channel. That's it. Otherwise, they go home. They're not doing it for free. So if you can understand that the facts about how you receive the facts are important, ask better questions. What is the agenda that's driving this information? Yeah, if you're a conspiracy theorist, you're going to use this as positive confirmation that everything you've been telling everyone that you've said you're crazy about is true. So what would I program myself with? First, there's two book recommendations I would absolutely, unequivocally, without question, tell people to grab right now in a heartbeat. Now, I'm going to give a little bit of bias on that because one of them is mine. But before you start laughing and rolling your eyes, the subtitle of that is called The Inside Track, An Inspirational Guide to Conquering Adversity, which I wrote 3 years ago. And it is a tool set. And don't take my word for it. Just go to Amazon and look at the reviews. If you see any review where it hasn't changed somebody's life or helped them get through something that is equivalent or worse than this, then don't buy it. And I've already trying to give it away to everybody to try to help them. I give an e-copy away on that training just to help people. If you want a hard copy of the book or give it to somebody who you know is struggling, then rather than pay $29.95 at Barnes & Noble or Amazon, I'm giving it away for a small amount just to cover the shipping. In fact, I lose $2 on each one because I want to help people right now. And you can do that at getpeetsbook.com. That's a gift to everybody that's panicking. The other book I would highly recommend, and I don't have a discount source for it, but it's worth 10 times the money anyway, that is Dr. Joe Dispenza's You Are the Placebo. When you see the scientific compilation and research around how powerful your mind is, you will start to take it seriously enough to use it in a way that can protect you here, because it is your best line of defense. Again, every thought produces a chemical. Yeah, so the inside track and you are the placebo. If you've read both those books, you are going to be calmer. You're going to have a specific tool set on how to arm yourself against fear, panic, how to build a positive psychology, how to understand. I go into the energetic dynamics of egregores, and when you step back and look at it, you'll laugh at how predictable everything is. Yeah, but that is something you can do practically. Go program. If you're under curfew right now, you've got time on your hands. Don't waste it binging on Netflix. Certainly don't compromise your immune system further by staying glued to the mainstream media, who have one objective, which is to keep you glued to the mainstream media. All right? So, yeah, those two books, program yourself with it. Exercise. Exercise produces healthy stress. Healthy stress produces an anabolic response from the body to increase the immune system. All right? Negative stress, fear, panic, worry, anxiety, yeah, cortisol, adrenaline, you get the idea. So, yeah, there's a lot of people doing exercise. I'm doing an exercise. I'm doing a free 30-minute workout tomorrow on my Facebook feed. I did one like that earlier in the week. It went down a storm. We had a blast. I'm also educating people on how to use your mind while working out to make it even more effective for your immune system. Yeah, so, yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can do. And if you are worried, the first thing we really want to do is take our attention off of ourselves. If you can't get over your fear and doom and gloom because your brain has been consistently programmed through overexposure to this, and it's now on autopilot, you're unconsciously competent at worrying, then focus on helping somebody else. Taking your attention off yourself and putting it onto somebody else is one of the fastest ways to drop stress about what we thought we were worried about, because it taps into that innate nature of who we are, which is somebody who was born to grow and contribute. And rather than get into huge amounts of other stuff, just what I've shared there, Nicole, is more than enough to give people the resources to ride this thing through in the best shape they can be.
Yes. Oh, excellent advice. And you're reminding me about, I haven't talked to the author of the You Are the Placebo book in years either. So that's going to be my
Spencer,
next. That's going to be my next email today. So, but this was perfect advice, and the voice of sanity ringing out over the airwaves is a great thing right now, and we're trying to do coverage on this every day. So I'm really, really grateful that you had time today to be here, Peter.
No, pleasure's mine. And again, I've got a load of free resources on my YouTube channel. I've got loads of great videos. That training is on my YouTube channel that'll help people. Just go into Peter Sage. Yeah, you'll be able to find me. And anything I can do to support you or support your viewers or listeners, I'm more than happy to do, because right now the world needs role models and people that are beacons of certainty for those that are freaking out because they can't handle uncertainty. And we all have the opportunity to be able to do that. And as I said, when the dust settles on this thing and calm heads prevail and people start addressing the white elephants in the room that nobody's talking about, and rather than just blindly accept facts because our front of our brain is shut down through program panic, then there's going to be a lot of very interesting lessons at the end of this.
There are indeed. Link up if that's okay.
Get Pete's book.com.
So you're giving it away free. They just pay for the shipping, right?
Yep, just a little bit for shipping. It's about a third of the price you'd pay if you walked into Barnes & Noble. It literally just it doesn't even cover the actual cost of publishing and sending it out, but I want to get it out there because, right now, it was written for this kind of situation, and it's a step-by-step guide for anyone that needs resources, emotional, psychological, and spiritual resources right now to handle this kind of thing and be the best version of themselves for their family.
All right. Peter Sage, great to talk to you today, and it's been too long. Keep in touch. Keep us in the Peter Sage loop.
I will indeed. You take care. Keep doing what you're doing, Nicole. You're an absolute legend and a voice of reason for everybody here. Love you, girl. Stay amazing.
You too. Peter Sage can be found online at petersage.com and getpetesbook.com. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
Call in to live News for the Soul shows daily for intuitive coaching, readings, numerology, leading edge health information, and much, much more with featured hosts from around the world. Go to newsforthesoul.com to join the next live show now. That's newsforthesoul.com.